colleague Sam Thompson, who, if you saw him, you'd sort of right away assume he was a hippie.
Get up off your ass and get up on the podcast! Rich Police Radio! Rich Police Radio! Rich Police Radio! Rich Police Radio! Get up off your ass and get up on the podcast! Rich Police Radio!
All right, welcome to Rich Police Radio. I'm back with a guest who has been on the show. I think this is your seventh or eighth. You've been on a lot. And I mean, you know, I've been doing the show for a million years, so it's not that unreasonable that I'd have some people on, you know, multiple times. But yeah, I think you're up there. You're approaching the top of the leaderboard, I think, as far as frequent guests, which is kind of cool. So I think the best way to start this off is, as usual, for you to introduce yourself, give a bit of background about what you do as an artist, and we can get into what we're going to talk about.
Hey, I'm Greg Rikus, going for double digits here. And I'm a folk punk artist from Winnipeg. I tour the world quite often across Canada, the US, and Europe. Just got back from a tour. I was in the States for about 3.5 weeks. I did a bunch of Eastern stuff. I even got on a couple Cancer Bat shows, which was weird being an acoustic guy on a metal show, but
for sure,
somehow it went over actually really well. And got a big show coming up that I'm extremely excited for with my favorite local band, the Bonaduces, and other homies, Mise en Scene.
And I think that the Bonaduces are a lot of people in our generations, one of our favorite bands, at least. You know, I mean, we all grew up going to see them and listening to their records. And it's very cool that they're back sort of up and running and playing shows again and making new music. But I do want to get into that because that's sort of the timing around why we're doing this call now. But I wanted to ask you about the touring thing, because I know you've had some, you know, you tour the States a lot. The States is kind of a volatile place right now. What is it like being a non-American touring in the U.S. at this point? Is it trickier to get in, to get out? It seems like there's, you know, and I don't want you to, you know, say anything that's going to affect your chances to go back there. But just in general, as an outsider, I mean, that country seems like it has a lot going on right now as far as border issues in general.
Yeah, so the biggest issue, you need a work visa to get down there, and I'm sure we've talked about it before,
but
to say it again, a P2 work visa, isn't that hard to get? You basically fill out a bunch of get promoters to fill out a bunch of contracts, and I have tons of friends down there. I've been touring down there for over 15 years,
yeah.
So I'm really lucky in that part's not hard. You need to cough up about $850, and it fluctuates depending on exchange rate. And that's $510 for Department of Homeland Security, $125 for the American Federation of Music. And then there's a courier fee just to make sure your app gets there. They send it secured courier. So you apply, and that used to take them about 6 weeks to process. Right now, the acronym for the office that actually processes it is escaping me. But you kind of send it to the American Federation of Music. I'm a union member of our local. They're affiliated. It's kind of all that part. If you're a member of your local musicians union, you're affiliated. You send it off, and it took them about 6 weeks to process. Right now, it is at – sorry, I'm hitting the table. Right now, it is at about 10 months to process.
Wow.
And the problem is that it's very hard on my level – to book anything that far in advance. And where it could open up a problem is you apply 10 months in advance. A lot of those shows I have on contract are at clubs that literally closed, or
sure,
maybe the date had to be modified slightly because that far out, it's all hearsay. So when you get to the border and you're showing, you know, almost never they really want to see all the contracts. The border part's the easiest. But if I showed something that doesn't match what's on the website, that could be a problem. So that's why it could potentially, or why it is potentially bad to apply that far in advance for me.
Yeah, but you have
before
to.
This. Yeah, oh, I'm sorry. I should have. Before this, again, 6 weeks, like it was a snap to get this work visa. And to this very day, I have no idea if, because no one's ever been called. Like, you send off all this stuff and you just magically get the work visa in the mail.
Right.
You get to the border, they ask you some questions. It's all like, do you have any weapons? Sometimes they want to look at your merch. They charge you a small fee to bring in your merch. I should mention too, sorry, I'm kind of jumping around here.
It's okay.
One reason why it's so important for me to get a visa is because I have this giant stomp box on top of the van. I travel with multiple guitars that are in unique tunings.
Sure.
I have a bunch of merch. It'd be very hard for me to kind of, you know, just go to the States, grab some stuff and kind of sneak in. Even though I'm at such a low level and I'm playing very small shows, When you get to the border, it doesn't really matter. When you have that much gear, they kind of want to see it.
Yeah.
And I've had tremendous success over the last 15 years doing the work visa, doing it legit. Here we are now, over coming on 2 years of this long, long duration to get your work visa approved. But now let me jump to March 1st when I drove to the border with my work visa in hand.
Well, this is kind of why I was, I was following that sort of adventure on your social media, but go ahead, yeah.
Yeah. And I got there and it was no trouble. The guy asked almost zero questions. The entire interview was about 5 minutes. All he asked is, okay, March 26th, your visa expires. You understand that. You'll be gone by then? Yes, sir. And that was that. He let me in. I was prepared to potentially encounter ICE in a negative context. I didn't see a peep of them. And not to minimize how it happened, because every friend I talked to was like, oh, yeah, in Minneapolis, specifically in Chicago, but even other cities were like, it was insane. Like, anywhere you went, you'd see them driving around, hassling people. It was very, very bad. But the thing I thought that was really cool is every single, you know, restaurant I went to, every single record store, music shop, anywhere I went that wasn't like a Starbucks or a Walmart, had a sign in the window that was like anti-ICE, ICE not welcome. So I don't know really how much it was portrayed here in Canada in the media. I'll confess, like, Democracy Now! And The Daily Show is where I get most of my news these days.
Right.
But in mainstream media, I don't know if it was portrayed of that much of a pushback against it. But when I was down there, like, everywhere I went, it seemed people were up against ICE and anti-ICE. And I'm sure somebody supports it, but I didn't see anything at all positive about ICE. So that was cool.
Instant regret in a minor office somewhere at a major intersection bassoon. Silently motions as you think of the call. The voice will be shaking and the tails be tall. We're all dying inside. Never thought that might mean someday soon. You can pull or break by the side of the road. You can punch at the wheel. Kind of explode, it's not hard to explain. In the end, it's not all of your fault. We all run out of reasons to pretend we don't care. We run out of excuses why we're not there. We all run out of hope. In the end, we all run from ourselves. Should have lived better, should have saw the clues. Should have quit smoking, maybe on the booze. Should have told off my boss and quit my dumb job years ago. It's so hard to plan life when you can't read the signs. In the pessimistic times when mortality reminds, the clock is still ticking and none of us know when she'll blow. Doctors bleed through action as they probe you and pale you. We can start you on chemo even though it might. We'll be right back.
burn in remission. No one could have guessed you'd be in this position. Almost feels like you're starting from scratch at 50 years old. Friends all got busy, new jobs, new lives. Some got divorced, new husbands, new wives. Let's hang out real soon. We're all really glad you pulled through. Let's time in our life where we ask why we fight, why we don't just surrender. Walk into the light. Life's what you make it. Too easy to watch it all fall. I would trade all the lessons for a reason to learn. When you trade all the knowledge to lose the concern. Ambitious heart. The burden it is. Would it train this ambitious heart?
I guess the reason that I keep asking you about this border stuff is because there's been so much chaos in, you know, in terms of the two countries for a number of years now. And you have such a long history of touring in the States. I mean, you do it. It seems like constantly you're down there. I know you're other places as well. You're across Canada. You're going all over the place, but you seem to have like a very big percentage of your fan base is in America.
Yeah, it's huge. There's so many places to play, so many cool scenes. When I first was starting the solo thing and my former band Hi-Fi Drive, we toured tons.
Yeah.
But I always say we toured more than any local band and less than any touring band. It was so hard at the four of us to make that jump to more than three months a year. So when I started the solo thing, that was kind of the main focus. Well, you can only mow the lawn in Canada so many times. You know, Europe, like you can overdo Europe. That's sure. For sure. One, like, you know, once every year or 2 years, a year off is about what the max you can reasonably do. So the States was clearly the best option in terms of wanting to do that many shows, to try to do 150 shows a year. Another thing I want to say, when I first started going down there in 2011, this is going to, I'm going to get emails about this, of how dumb this is going to sound. I felt the American dream.
Okay.
I went down there and like that idea of anyone can make it there. As a Canadian, I felt that because everywhere I went, people were like, Greg, we see you working hard, man. We see you hustling, doing all these shows, playing your ass off. You know, you're one of us, man. Anyone can make it here. I had that support and I felt like an honorary American. No matter where I went, I was welcome and I was celebrated that like, this is what this country is about, man. You come here, you work hard and you're going to get traction. And not again to pick on, I don't think I'm going to get banned if I say the current administration is clearly the opposite direction. We're like, if you're not born here, this country ain't for you. And that kind of not, I don't want to like I'm mad, but I'm also very sad because the thing that I thought made America great was that the
totally.
Idea, you know, the huddled masses line right on that ledger that the Statue of Liberty is holding. That idea was what made that country so awesome and truly, you know, like this land of the free kind of place. And going there, I haven't necessarily experienced that. Like, no one has looked at me in the eye and told me you're not welcome here necessarily.
Yeah, yeah.
But that rhetoric is clear. And the idea that, you know, to get a work visa, immigration is ridiculous. Like, something that used to take 6 months is now taking 10 months. It's clear they're not prioritizing that anymore. And when I go there, like if we want to get kind of into the weeds a little bit on this, most of the places I play wouldn't do a show on a Monday,
right,
on a Tuesday, on a Wednesday. These are places that would have been closed. However, because I'm in town, they're going to get a local band or two on it. They're going to open up those doors. Like, people are going to come and drink beers. I'm not trying to oversell it that I'm like single-handedly, you know,
you're saving
America, the
American
economy. But the idea that I'm like going there and taking jobs is not it at all. Hey, sure, maybe there's one or two nights where, okay, they're going to pay anyone to get on this stage tonight. I'm just the stiff going up tonight.
Yeah.
But that is few and far between. So that's kind of my take on that. I appreciate the moment to rant. I don't think it's unsafe for someone like me to go down there necessarily, you know, a cis white male.
Totally, yeah.
But yeah, I had an easy experience at the border. Oh, I'm sorry. One other thing I want to mention. Years ago, I got pulled over by a police officer, and he asked what state Manitoba was. That was the other thing that worried me about ICE, is that if they see a license plate they don't recognize,
totally,
they are clearly less trained than police officers would they potentially, you know, assault me just to kind of, we don't know who this foreigner is or something. It never happened. And I'm not trying to, I know things can get blown out of proportion. And the main takeaway of this should be that I had a very successful tour. I was safe the whole time, very easy to get in. They didn't go through my phone and look how much I hate Trump or how, you know, how anti-American my views are necessarily. That didn't happen to me. But I don't want to minimize it isn't happening and that ICE wasn't terrible. But I guess that's it. I got lucky, maybe. I had an okay experience. Not everyone does.
Yeah. I wonder if, I don't want to talk about this the whole time, but I do wonder if maybe your sort of long history of going there a lot. I mean, they must have records, right? When you cross the border and this is a person who's crossed like a million times over the past, you know, decade and a half. So that might be in your favor. But anyway, let's talk about Canada. Let's talk about Winnipeg. Let's talk about the Bonaduces. Obviously, you know, like I said at the beginning, like you said, this is your favorite band. This is a band that really meant a lot, I think, to a lot of people our age, you know, and maybe 10 or so years older as well, going to shows in the 90s and everything. And so what is it? I know you've played with them before since they've sort of been back as a band. What do they mean to you, though? What is sort of your relationship with the Bonaduces?
They were kind of the first local band that I really started to follow. And I'm trying to think of like the first ever punk show I went to at the Albert. I think I was like 15. It was 1998, and it was like strung out at the Albert.
Right.
They played on the floor. The monitor was on a milk crate. Like it was awesome to think of like, you know, how successful that band was, and I got to see it when like they were still literally playing, you know, on the floor punk show
on a
Sunday afternoon at the Albert's. But that was still like a big band, a touring band that was on Fat Records. And I was kind of, you know, you're exposed to like big arena shows and then maybe there's like a bar band, you know, of, and then that was my experience with that. And then the Bonaduces, I think was the first time friends were like, we're going to check out this really cool local band. Maybe they borrowed me a CD, really liked the stuff, went to see them. And that was that moment where I was like, holy crap. Like there's even a level lower where this is just a bunch of local people like Mike Koop. I think at the time he was working at Value Village as a cashier.
Right.
Which I was a cashier at Value Village. Like I identified them. They seemed like this is an accessible band. They'd finish the show and you could like go say hi to them and chat with them. They were super duper nice. And that kind of false idea that like, you know, a band will play and then go to their green room and do like 50 lines of coke. And there's just
a bunch of groupies, you know, and whatever,
as far as the line can, I can see. Like they're just the real people that just love music like you do and that you could be a part of it. I'm not just like a passive listener. I'm a part of that scene. It's as important. I'm in the audience sing along as they are on the stage. I just thought that was so cool. It made me want to be more and more involved in the scene. And, you know, if it wasn't for them, like maybe there would have been another band, but that was that big moment of mine that I'm like, holy crap, like this is it. This is what it's all about. And it was my in. It was like, that was the door that opened of like, I'm going to do local shows. I'm going to start organizing. I'm going to hustle to get a band. We're going to play shows. Like they inspired me to do it too, because it was one of those things like, this is an awesome band that's doing it, but they're not doing it under this huge label or this, you know, sponsorship or whatever.
It's DIY as possible. Yeah.
Exactly. Normal people doing awesome things.
Yeah.
A backlit man meanders to and fro. A squint to trace the outline as he slowly fades away. Turns his head to see what's left to show. The strangers that he'd recognize outweigh the friends he knows. Shoot all the messengers with their innocence of fault. Bearer of bad news is always first against the wall. Tell the king to keep his breach, there's demons closing in. To watch him squirm and churn and weep, regretting every sin. Well, this life is a nightmare. He stumbles out withdrawing from the crowd. Ripping, grasping, clawing at the walls to hold him up. The stare is black and vile to the sky. Believe in those who seek the truth, but finding it's a lie. So throw the captain overboard, this vessel now be mine. Fly the flag of wickedness, so black and not arise. Stain the seas of red with blood, no innocent survive. A relic of forgotten pain is all that burns inside. Life is a nightmare, life is a nightmare, life is a nightmare.
Well, if our struggle is depression, lonesome habits are tell. What's done is done. If we're the cause, then save us from ourselves. I'm just selfish and divided. I'm just ignorant and cruel. But you won't be get to win the game by breaking every rule. So let's burn the bridge, let's lock the door, let's throw away the key. You won't need friends where we are going, all you need is me. Light will isolate and permeate the reasons of our minds. If you make it, that's the case you want to run the road. As we go further and further and further and further down. Further and further and further and further down. We go further and further and further and further down. Further and further and further and further down. We go further, 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 further down. Further, 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 further down. We go further, 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 further down. Further, 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 further
That's they weren't that band for me. They were one of those bands. Like I definitely, you know, I like them. I have their albums. I still listen to them. Like, you know, they're a great band, but they were definitely among those bands that did the exact same thing to me. We, you know, we met each other when we were teenagers, different parts of the city, I'm sure, like different backgrounds, whatever. But yeah, a lot of people in our sort of group of local bands that started playing shows together around the same time definitely came to the local music scene that way. We discovered somebody, and that somebody sort of showed us you don't have to be famous, you don't have to have $1 million, you don't have to be, you know, have a record deal to be able to start a band. You can just have a guitar and learn three chords and go crazy, and someone's going to listen to it, and they might hate it, they might love it, but it doesn't matter, you can just do it, right? And so I definitely know the feeling, and I think a lot of people know the feeling. Even now, I'm sure there's 15-year-old kids now who are hearing local bands and getting their minds blown and wanting, maybe hearing your band and wanting to do that as well. But just in terms of like stylistically, I mean, I know there were a lot of punk bands around locally at that time, and there still are, but the Bonaduce always had that pop element, right? They always had the very, very big hooks, and it was clearly had the punk edge and the energy and the speed, but there was that sort of melodicness to it as well. And how did that sort of affect you? Because your bands have had that too. I mean, whether it's your solo project, whether it's High Five Drive, whether it's even before that, I mean, that's always sort of been part of the Greg Rikas sound, I guess, right?
Yeah. Just the fact that there was two guitars not doing the exact same thing, not both doing power chords. Like,
yeah.
That, you know, that there was like Mike Koop's leads and stuff like that. Like, well, what was the, like, so many great parts that I think, again, when I was writing stuff, like that was in my head of like one guitar is going to do that, the other guitar is do that. Not that, again, they were the first ones to do it.
Yeah.
But in terms of me being exposed and me taking bits and pieces of all the bands I loved, lyrics too, like Doug's lyrics are incredible.
Really
you can
good,
just
yeah.
read the lyrics and it's entertaining. Never mind putting it to music. I still think like the Democracy of Sleep is still an album I enjoy listening to and still will like, you know, if I'm ever on tour and someone's like, so Winnipeg, I'm like, probably haven't heard this, man. Check this out. And
I actually have three copies of that album. Like, it's one of those ones. Whenever I happen to come across one, there's a few albums like that, but I obtain it. Do whatever, just in case, you know, someone could happen to my other two copies. You need to have one. It's a great record.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're playing the show. It's at the West End, right? On the the 8th of May.
Yep.
With the Bonaduce's, with Mise en Scene, who I just had on the show recently. Great band as well. They just released an album. Yeah. Yeah. So what is it? I mean, I don't want this to be like the Bonaduce's fanboy podcast or whatever, but well, you know, all these years later, decades later, 30 years later, whatever it is, you are now playing shows with these guys. And, you know, you were, like you said, you could hang out with them before. They were very accessible. That was part of the appeal of the punk scene when we were kids. But I mean, you're sort of on the same level as they are now, if not even more so, because you're actively touring, because, you know, you've been doing this plugging away for as long as you have. How does that feel now to be on the same show with this band that meant so much to you when you were coming up?
Still kind of like I don't want to say I'm starstruck in the same way. Like when we talk, it's cool, but it's not like I forgot the history. It's not like I don't know all the wonderful things these people do and the high level of respect I have for them, you know, like hold them in very, very high regard. And like, it's such an honor to do the show. And I hope that doesn't seem cliche or anything like that.
No, I don't think it does.
And to appreciate too that they've still made space in their lives. Like, they're not that much older than I am, but you know, it gets harder and harder every year. Like myself, I'm about to hit 45 this year, like, you know, approaching that 50, and I'm already trying to like keep that infrastructure ahead of me of like, how can I continue to do it as I get older, as you know, health things start to happen and all that kind of stuff. And I'm not saying they're old. If they're listening to this, you guys are not old. You're still my heroes. But
that's how I'm going to promote the show. Greg tells the Bonaduce's they're ancient. Yeah.
That'll be the tagline. Yeah. No, that is not true. It is. But appreciation for that is that they've still made it a part of their lives. And it's, you know, again, they're still inspiring me to like, cool, in 5 or 10 years, I want it to still be a part of my life. And what do I got to do to make that happen?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And I think I think they've sort of present a reasonable model for that, right? I mean, like they're I'm sure they all have day jobs, they all have families, they all have other stuff going on, whatever's going on in their lives, but they make the time to do this because they love it.
Exactly. And I don't remember like the last time they played at the West End. I don't know if it's how long it's been. You'll have to check out with them. It's been forever for me, I think.
Yeah. It would have been late 90s for me when I saw them there for the last time, for sure.
Yeah, like 2010, Hi-Fi Drive did a show at the West End. I think it was like January. That was the last time I played that stage. I might have done, you know, I did appear on that stage with the Dust Rhinos.
Oh, yeah.
For one of their sociable things. Cool, but in terms of like actually playing as a band, this is the first that Greg Rikus and the Inside Job have ever played the West End. So that's really exciting for us, too. It's something we want to do for a while. It was just a matter of timing and kind of the stars finally aligned. And Mise en Scene being on is really cool too. We wanted like the two bands, us and the Bonaduce's alone, I think would pull a few people. And Mise en Scene is just like amazing. They came out with a new record recently, which it's on my docket today to listen.
It's really good.
Not gonna lie, I haven't heard it yet. I came home, I got home from tour, hit the ground running. I've been working every day, and this is my first day off to catch up on stuff and listen to music. So that is the plan this afternoon. Or when I'm out putting up posters.
Right, which of course you're going to be doing.
People on planet Earth that still puts up physical posters.
I think that if there's a day where you give up putting up posters, it means the music scene is over. Like, it's just as the end point. If we don't see you out there in like minus 40, and not that it's minus 40 right now, but it's kind of it's a nice constant, right? It's like to be driving past Osborne or whatever on a bus, there's Greg putting up posters.
Yeah, exactly. And I still, like, I've tried to figure out how many I put up. It's less than a million, more than half a million. I think we ran the numbers once, and it's got to be over 500,000 posters I have stuck to poles. So
that's wild.
Proud of that.
So, you know, it's funny, though, the West End thing, because our bands used to play the West End all the time back in the day, and it seemed very normal venue for punk shows with, like, a million bands on them and everything. It's kind of almost strange that you haven't played it yet, but it's exciting that you're doing it now. But what is, I mean, where is the Inside Job now, as far as how, because you've had this band for a while, you've done a couple of records now, three records I guess, right, already with this band. So what is the sort of current state of this group, because you obviously have established something as a unit?
Yeah, like I'm really loving this lineup. I've loved every lineup of the band, and it's like an apples to oranges. Like everyone has brought something special to the table. Like our previous drummer Eric,
yeah,
Laura, our previous bass player, lives in Ottawa. I just played there, and Laura jumped on stage and sang backup for a bunch of songs.
That's cool.
Like
yeah.
we're still all homies. We're still really close. Loving this current lineup. Everyone brings something really neat to the table. Blue from Gratoco, like incredible backup singer, bass player. Shea has a really cool style. Daryl is awesome. I love having Daryl in the band. So really, really stoked on the lineup. In terms of like my personal life, and again, as we were just talking, trying to fit like how do you balance music and life, I just got married.
That's right. Yeah, I was at your bachelor
party. Excited about that. Yeah, it was an awesome, awesome, awesome thing. I absolutely love my wife, Katie, to bits, and trying to find a way to fit that in and juggle, you know, like let's throw it on the table. Money doesn't grow on trees, and it's expensive to put out records. All the touring I do, I'm very lucky. I'm not in that top 5% that you're like living off your music. I'm in that, you know, top 10% that you're like breaking even.
Yeah.
I'm coming home with money, and that's paying a lot of the expenses associated with being in a band. It's not as much of a burden as it used to be. However, having saying that, like I still work audio all the time. I'm still doing a lot of work, and we really, really were excited to do a new record soon. However, it's just not in the cards to put something brand new out, but there's a, but I do need a new release. And my first ever album, The Dude Abides, has never been on vinyl.
Yeah, I have the CD. Yeah, it's right.
Yeah. Yeah, and vinyl, like for me, it's the dominant media. Everyone loves it. It's a collection piece. It's a great way to listen to it. And The Dude Abides never being on vinyl is also a chance to, okay, well, if we're going to re-release it, let's do something special. So we're in the process of picking out two of those songs. We're going to re-record it Private Ear
cool.
as a full band. So you'll have, you know, the original 10 tracks on it, plus another two, so it'll be 12 tracks on vinyl, and I'm hoping that can come out early next year. January would be great, but springtime next year, we'll put out a re-release of The Dude Abides, and
that's
that'll awesome. Kind of cheat us, you know, a little bit of time to kind of save up and have a new record at some point in the future. But in terms of plans, like we have this show coming up. There is another one at the end of the month. My good dear friend, Tim Holehouse, is coming back. I don't want to talk too much about that because I can't put too many shows on the docket. And then in the summertime, we're definitely going to do more stuff, probably some out of town stuff, not touring the fall. So more shows in the fall. I'd really, really love to do a show at some point with Pink Snot and Shit Happens. In my mind, that would be an awesome bill. I'm home. I'm not touring the rest of the year, so we're going to try to do more stuff. And absolutely love playing with everyone right now. It's a really, really good spot I'm in right now in terms of music. And I'm really lucky and fortunate that I'm with some such rad people.
Awesome. Yeah, it's good to hear. I'm glad you're still doing it, too. It's like it's nice to have that continuity, right? I mean, like, there's not a lot of people who started, you know, when you started that are still doing it, at least not in the same sort of context, right? I mean, I know you're doing folk punk now versus just straight ahead punk rock, but it's very much related. I mean, you're like you just said, you want to play with these bands that are notably heavier and louder than you, but it still seems like it would fit, right?
Yeah, like again, going back to that Cancer Bat show, which was the kind of biggest missed match.
Yeah.
And the first thing I said when I got on stage, like after the first song, was like, you know, I'm sure everybody's wondering if they walked into the wrong show. Like, no, you have not. This, you know, I'm a folk punk guy from Winnipeg, give my little quick little spiel, and then played one of kind of the more heavier ones. And I sold merch. People liked it.
Cool.
I think a lot of like the idea that the one genre you listen to and maybe dress like isn't what appeals to people these days anymore. There was a time that I think, like, you know, if you're like a metal dude, you clearly have a uniform you're supposed
to
wear.
For sure.
There's bands that are off limits. You know, you can listen to that, you can't listen to that. And that's kind of gone away. I think this is kind of one of my theories. The iPod had a lot to do about that, because all of a sudden kids can have like 20 million songs. So it's not just the few CDs you can afford to listen to. You can listen to anything. So people that truly say, I listen to everything, those people finally actually existed, right? Like, how many people are like, oh, I listen to everything, and you could easily like pick out a few genres they probably don't.
Yeah,
that doesn't exist anymore. So, and I know a lot of festivals too, like Pooza Fest is a multi-venue festival in Montreal. It's quite popular. The Fest in Gainesville.
Yeah.
Florida's another one, or things like that, where it's just a bunch of cool bands. It's not necessarily one style of music. You know, maybe some other, like, you don't have EDM artists showing up necessarily, but to have like a metal band and a folk punk guy isn't crazy.
Yeah.
So I think, again, that's why that kind of stuff works, and why I could get on stage and play with anyone and I still sell a few things after, because people these days kind of like everything.
They do. Yeah. And I think it's interesting you say that, because I think that what you said earlier about The Dude Abides being re-released, I mean, why I think that, you know, having teenage kids, I think we're in an era that I've seen from the music they listen to, where, you know, we used to listen to records and we would know sort of when they were from and what era they were from. And now kids will listen to music from any time period and it all gets jumbled together. And I think it's actually really cool. I can't do it. I need to have the facts and the liner notes and all this stuff. But I mean, I see my kids, I see other younger people listening to records. They could have a record from the 90s and then the next song is from 1964 and the next song is from last week, and they're completely different genres. And it almost seems like there's no lines anymore that's separating anything. So something like a reissue of your first record could come out as a new record and no one's going to even question it, because half of the audience is going to be listening to just whatever. And so it's not going to seem like, oh, Greg's just reissuing his old songs again. It's going to be, oh, cool, new songs I haven't heard.
Yeah, when I pitched it to a few people, I kind of did a bit of a, like, you know, to some people who've been coming to our shows forever, a bit of a test of like, what do you think of that? Everyone was like, I would love it. I love to collect your records. Yeah. I would love to hear that on vinyl.
I'll buy one.
So really, yeah, really, really, really good response to it. So I think it's kind of the right thing. I also think, like, in terms of the history of music, like, you know, they say, what is it? History doesn't repeat, but it rhymes.
Okay.
And I think a lot of like kids, someone who identifies with Nirvana from the 90s and like, you know, Kurt Cobain was so intense, man, so am I. I think it's kind of like a timeless idea, because I often think of like, well, okay, if you're like 15 years old in 2026, you're listening to something from the 90s, that's like what we're approaching, you know, that's 30 years ago, approaching 40 years ago. When I was 15 in the 90s, 30 or 40 years ago was like the 50s or the 60s.
It's so weird. Yeah.
Exactly. Like some weak Bing Crosby stuff. Like, oh, listen to this. Like, there's no way that I would ever listen to that as that, because like, no way, man. Like, what we lick these days is intense. But as music went along, like a lot of that stuff in the 80s, the 90s, 2000s, like, it was unique. It wasn't just our version of what just happened. It's totally not this like 25-year cycle. Like, that just, the circle is still like, hasn't quite come back around yet. So I think that's part of it too, where you do have younger people identifying with music from the 90s. It's not just a repeat of like, well, yeah, our parents like this and I like this and they're going to like that. It is like something unique. And I don't know, I'm totally off on that. Anyone can email me and debate me on that if they'd like, but I truly believe that. I still think, you know, the music from the 90s, as much as it maybe had influences and what it was about, you know, was stuff from previous, it is its own kind of self-contained thing. And I love that kids like it. I love that kids can identify with Kurt Cobain like I did when I was 15 or whatever, right?
Totally. I have a 16-year-old right now who just borrowed my Nevermind and Bleach CDs. So, I mean, it's, you know, it's a thing for sure.
Yeah.
And it is cool to see. And the coolest thing about all of this too is, like you said, you know, the stuff from the 50s we thought was lame. There was so much cool stuff happening in the 50s that we didn't even know about because we didn't have access to it, right? So, I mean, like now kids can find pretty much anything and they might find that really like edgier stuff from that era rather than just like Pat Boone or Bing Crosby or whatever, right? So, yeah, because he was out there. There was all kinds of really cool shit happening. But anyway, so show is happening on May 8th. Bonaducci's, Greg Rikus Inside Job, Mise en Scene, Western Cultural Center. Where can people find more about your music if they are new to what you do and want to hear some more stuff?
The best, I am still on all the streaming services. I do want to say I'm not stoked to be on Spotify. And I did think
I'm not stoked my show's on Spotify either.
Yeah, I thought of pulling, and where it kind of came down to is, you know, there could be like younger person who lives with their parents and Spotify's what their parents have. And that would just remove that accessibility to them. And I'm such a small artist. I don't think it's, if you are kind of a bigger artist, maybe it would move the needle. Someone like me, I don't think it was just kind of the people that listened to my stuff on there was taking it away from them. But I am on all streaming services. I always say if you just Google me, you could find me. Greg Rikus is somewhat of a unique name. Bandcamp, if you do want to toss some money down to get some digital MP3s or whatever, pardon me. I had a brain fart there for a sec. Digital format of it, you can get it on Bandcamp. And then I'm easy to find. If you ever want to message me, like I personally manage my own Facebook and Instagram. So if you ever want to ask like, hey, why aren't you ever playing blank? Or, hey, I would love a record. Would you mind mailing one to me or whatever? A lot of times I'll leave records at stores. There might be a store in your town that does have a copy of my stuff. That's usually the best way to check it out. And I want to add, I don't know if the show will sell out. I don't want to start panic. I would love, but I know we have sold already over 100 tickets for it. So it wouldn't hurt if you really want to go. It doesn't hurt to grab that ticket in advance. As far right now, we do expect to still have tickets at the door if you're wishy-washy, if you'll be able to do it or not. And please support the West End. The West End is an amazing place. They're trying to do more and more local stuff. There's more and more excitement happening there. Oh, it's a great room to play, and it has tons of history in Winnipeg. So I'm happy and proud to be playing there in May. It's going to be rad.
Everyone.